Hey there, I'm Robert, and I'd like to welcome you to The Outfall, where we dive into the backstories of our water world and infrastructure. Today, we've got a special treat for you. Get ready for a front row experience in a lecture hall at Clemson University as we discuss Chelsea Wald's captivating book, Pipe Dreams, The Urgent Global Quest to Transform the Toilet. This book, which we selected as our 2022 book club pick, offers an entertaining, well-researched, and passionate exploration of sanitation. During this discussion, we'll uncover the story of how a science writer found herself writing a book about toilets. But that's not all. We also share thoughts and an open discussion about the book. Want to give a big shout out to Dr. Ladner for facilitating this event. So without further ado, let's drop in.
Welcome everybody to today's two-for-one meeting. Two-for-one because it is the EEES seminar series, and it's also the Outfall podcast book club meeting that we're combining forces and doing it together today. My name is David Ladner. I'm an associate professor in environmental engineering, and I think I know everybody who's in the audience here with us today. And we are very privileged to have with us Chelsea Wald, who is the author of this book, Pipe Dreams, The Urgent Global Quest to Transform the Toilet. We are also coming to you with two people in mind who I want to recognize right now. And we have empty chairs for them right here in the room. It's Robert Osborne and Amy Anderson. They would be sitting in those two stools right now, except that Robert got sick with a fever and Amy got sick with something else. And Robert is in bed and Amy's online. She was able to join us. She is apparently drinking a cup of hot coffee right now. But we're really, really grateful to have Chelsea with us because I listened to podcasts or NPR shows that she was on. She was on NPR's Fresh Air that you might be familiar with. She was on 99% Invisible with Roman Mars, who is like one of my idols because he's so great at producing podcasts and whatnot. So Chelsea, we thank you for being willing to come speak to us today. We'll let her talk for a few minutes. We'll let her introduce herself further if she wants to say anything else about what she's been up to. And then we'll have a discussion.
Thanks for the introduction. I'm really just happy. I'm just very pleased to be here today. And thanks for letting me join remotely from the Netherlands. It's dark here. And so you have me here in my home office in the evening, Friday evening. And there's another book club called the Lou Book Club that read my book. And I think that you guys are in some kind of competition for best book club of all time. So how did I start thinking about toilets? This is a little backstory. It's not in the book. This is a little bit just how science journalism works. I'm a science and environmental journalist. I've been doing this since I graduated from journalism school in 2004 with a master's from Indiana University. And in my work, writing for magazines, basically two things can happen. Either I pitch a story because I have an idea, or an editor comes to me and says, hey, do you want to write this story? Well, I didn't have toilets on the mind at all, but two editors happened to come to me from two different magazines with stories that had a toilet angle to them or some toilet element to them. The first was a story that was this one in Nautilus about new toilet technologies for very low resource contexts where people might have very poor toilets or in some cases no toilets at all, and they practice what's known as open defecation. For that, you might be familiar with the Gates Foundation's Reinvent the Toilet Challenge, which was pretty hot at that time and has been ongoing since then. And that's a bit of a sort of moonshot project to create a very low cost, reliable, high tech single family toilet that you could just kind of drop in anywhere in the world and it could just process the waste safely on site. The second story was a completely different story. It was about heat in cities, high income cities, and where people can get more of it or greener sources of it. And it turns out we throw a lot of heat into our sewers, not really through the toilet, but from hot water that goes down from showers and washing machines and dishwashers. And for the most part, that heat goes to waste. It's a technical challenge to get it back up again, but it can be done with heat pumps. And so it's sort of a wasted source of heat in cities. And it's one that some communities are starting to tap into. And I discovered that in the same year as I was learning about the Gates Challenge. And I thought, gosh, there just seems to be a lot going on. This sort of, as I say, it sort of opened the lid of my mind. And then I just started very eagerly consuming all kinds of information about toilets and sewage infrastructure and wanting to know more. And what happened was I ended up finding a ton of innovation in these systems and the toilets and in the infrastructure that surrounds them in different fields, engineering, yes, in different contexts, but also sociology and archaeology and design and all kinds of places. People thinking in new ways about the toilet. Why all of this innovation? What's going on? Because like many people, before I began this journey into the toilet, what I had absorbed about this technology is that it's just pretty miraculous. It's one of the great inventions of humankind. And what I do mean by the toilet is sort of the toilet and all of the wastewater infrastructure attached to it. The very short history is that Sir John Harrington ushered in the modern era of the flush toilet as early as the late 16th century when he invented an early version of a flush toilet. But it really didn't catch on until the 19th century when a version did gain popularity and became the toilet as we know it. This wasn't the whole story, so we're talking about the whole system. So at first, when the people started adopting these toilets, all the sewage that came out of them was a problem. There wasn't really anywhere for it to go. But then starting in the late 19th century, they got connected to big sewer networks. And then those at first discharged just into waterways for the most part, like rivers. That was a problem. And then finally, in the early 20th century, scientists developed wastewater treatment that cleaned sewage with microbes. And that combination of technologies combined with related advancements like water treatment led to huge benefits for public health, including the doubling of the human lifespan. And I'm not telling you guys anything you don't already know, I think. And so that's great. So that's the technology. But that picture actually isn't complete. So this is someone's toilet here. I'm standing, that's me. I'm standing in front of it. It's their main toilet and their only toilet. It's like the outhouse in someone's house in Cap Haitien in Haiti, in one of the very poor neighborhoods, one of the many very poor neighborhoods in that city, that beautiful city, I should say, a port city. And this isn't specific to Haiti. Billions of people use inadequate and unsafe toilets like these or not like these. Lots and lots of poop goes untreated. People might use toilet that looks like my toilet, but that their poop ends up going untreated. So there's lots of ways this infrastructure fails. But good toilets reach relatively few people. In fact, good toilet infrastructure. And as I continued to pay attention to toilets over the years, I saw many other ways in which toilet infrastructure is failing. That's not just failing to reach people, but it's failing in other ways. Here are some headlines from recent years, just as an example. So one thing is we have a problem with public toilets. There just aren't enough of them in the world and in most places, most cities. This is an annoyance for many people, but it's more than that for people who have, say, bladder issues or people who are menstruating or people who don't have a home to go to, unhoused people. people who don't feel safe asking for the restroom key in a cafe. And this headline refers to the pandemic, of course, when many of the restrooms that do exist closed because they were seen as a potential site of transmission of the coronavirus. And I think that sort of moment where all the toilets closed sort of gave everyone a glimpse into the lives of people who suffer from the lack of public restrooms all the time, not just during pandemic times. Toilet infrastructure is aging and chronically underfunded in the U.S. The American Society of Civil Engineers has given it a D+ on its annual infrastructure report card. And it's not designed with climate change in mind and extreme weather events to a great extent. And so when, in this case, Hurricane Irma hit Florida, this was a few years ago, but there have been more hurricanes since then there and in other places and other natural disasters. Sewage, in this case, just kind of coated the whole state because of flooding and failures of wastewater treatment plants, and can take a long time to get those treatment plants up online again. And then a third headline is many rural people can't afford expensive septic systems or the maintenance of them. And this can lead to sewage overflowing in yards and spread of disease. And this is a problem that's getting increasing attention in the United States, so you're probably aware of. And in my estimation, there's no reason that people in a wealthy country or really anywhere should have to live under those conditions. And when I think about it, I ask myself, what really is the point of a toilet if it just discharges into the backyard? It, in a sense, to me, that's an indictment of this technology and how we think of it and how we use it. In fact, you could say that the toilet plays a role in nearly every societal and environmental ill because the toilet is so embedded into our lives. It's not the cause of these ills, but it can exacerbate them. And then there's a flip side to that, which is that the toilet holds the potential to help solve many of these societal and environmental ills. And that's why I concluded that so many innovators are thinking about how we can ask more of our toilets in terms of health, sustainability, and equity. So this is kind of a method slide. So I decided to go look into these innovations, and I used a strategy that's called solutions journalism. It's a sort of growing movement within journalism. You can go look it up. I think it's solutionsjournalism.org, but I'm not quite sure. To learn more about it. But I want to tell you just a little bit about it to help you understand how I work and why the book kind of ended up looking like it did, organized as it did. Solutions journalism is not just about investigating problems like you might see in a newspaper expose, but investigating the responses to the problems. So solutions journalism has four pillars. It focuses on a response to a social problem. It distills the lessons in order to offer insights. It looks for evidence of some kind for the claims made. Often there's some scientific evidence, there's data, but sometimes there's not. But there's other forms of evidence. And it's honest about the shortcomings and limitations. So it's not an upworthy article that's just kind of a cheerleading article for the solution presented. So that allowed me to look into a number of innovations in the book. I think I haven't counted the number of projects, but I think I looked into, at least dozens, some of them in more detail than others. But, I was looking for projects that actually had something to evaluate, not just sort of research saying, oh, something is possible, but something that has been kind of implemented and that, you could kind of evaluate. That there would be something there to evaluate. Have I cut something from you guys? So I'm not going to go into the details of the projects, but in this introduction, because I want to leave time for questions, but I want to say, you know, among the projects I looked at was container-based sanitation in Cap-Haitien, which I showed you. This is the solution. Decentralized wastewater treatment. Oh, that's not the one that I meant. Decentralized wastewater treatment in the Netherlands, which is where I live. This is in Sneek, small decentralized treatment plant up in the north of the country, serving some housing development. A toilet salesman, a sort of Thomas Crapper, a modern Thomas Crapper. Oh, I need to tell you about Thomas Crapper, but a toilet salesman in Indonesia who I shadowed for a while and saw him selling very simple, what he calls a septic tank to replace basically open defecation in Indonesia. And so what I want to just conclude with in this introduction is a concept that I came up with for this book, which is the concept of Lutopia. So Lutopia is a place that we can imagine where toilets are healthier and more sustainable and accessible to all. Lutopia is a place in which people are asking more of their toilets. They're seeing the potential in them for living more in harmony with each other and with the planet. And I conclude that to get there, we will need a diverse array of solutions, what I call a kaleidoscope of toilets. Their toilets are connected to so many of the issues that we care about. By addressing toilets, we can address so much else: health, climate, environment, equity. So Lutopia is not just a world with better toilets. It's really a better world altogether. And so rather than serve up a lot of sort of distressing facts in the book, my hope is that this vision of Lutopia and this approach of solutions journalism will be motivating to readers and help create some positive change. And so I am ready for your questions. Thank you for your interest, and I'm going to do my very best to answer your questions, whatever you have.
Excellent. Let's give her a round of applause just right there. That'd be great. So I do want to start off the questions, though, and then I was going to, I'm going to drive this little camera right here. And then Gavin graciously agreed to pass the microphone around. And for everyone who's present here, the microphone, you do have to be speaking like pretty closely into the microphone for anyone on Zoom to hear you. So let's wait till you have the mic before you say anything. But Chelsea, so the book is about the toilet, but it's obviously about the sewer system and sanitation in general. And so I kind of had that first general question: Is this a toilet book, or is it a bigger system book? Obviously, it's both, but how do you see it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting question. It isn't, you know, it isn't a book. Like, I could imagine, and in fact, after I finished writing, I did imagine, I thought, oh, maybe I should have written that book. It's not actually a book that's about all the possible permutations of the toilet as interface of this, you know, there's sort of the rear, the butt facing, I don't know, technology of this whole system. But the toilet itself is sort of nothing. I mean, that's the example of the straight piping that happens in some places, you know, that is nothing without being connected to a larger infrastructure of some kind. And so the toilet is really just sort of a representation of that. And I would go farther to say that my book is not just about sort of what's possible with the toilet and the infrastructure, but really, if you really zoom out, it's really about everything. It's really about the whole sort of ecosystem that surrounds the toilet, which includes culture, includes environment, you know, that makes certain technologies appropriate for some places and not includes, you know, the economics of the toilet. So there's a whole, the system, if you talk about the system of the toilet, you know, you can really get quite broad with that. And I did try to be ambitious in sort of tackling many of those kinds of topics as well.
I had a question about a specific part of the book when talking about recycling toilet paper and the company Sirtec, and you met with, I don't know if it's Dr. Wessel. Who's Wessel?
Yeah, I don't think he's, I think probably Mr. is probably appropriate, but I'm not sure.
So
yeah.
First, I have like a few quick questions. First of all, since you published the book, were you able to go back there and see the installation in action? Because you mentioned in the book that you couldn't see it working that day because there was a piece of wood in the system.
Yeah. Yes. So this is one of those things. I go out into the field, you know, as I say, I go out and I try to get evidence, right? And part of the way I work as a journalist in this solution journal is part of the evidence that I collect. Is interviews with people and also seeing things work for myself. And what really happened when I went to that installation was it couldn't be turned on. This is an installation where they, for those of you who haven't read it, where they are taking basically used toilet paper, they're filtering it out of the sewage before the sewage enters the treatment plant. And you know, separating it out with a special technology that they've developed and sanitizing it. And then it's cellulose. It's just becomes a sort of raw material that could be used in any number of ways. They've used it in asphalt on a bike path in the Netherlands, which is, you know, an extremely Dutch thing to do. But you could make, say, paper plates out of it or paper cups. But anyway, so I went, this is a distance for me to go. And that day it wasn't working. There was a piece of wood stuck into it and it didn't turn on. And in fact, I don't know what the current state of that installation is, or indeed of that project. Although when the book came out, I wrote that engineer and I asked, and he said that it was proceeding. Part of the problem they have is just getting it. A lot of these projects, one of the problems they have is getting it from this sort of pilot stage, you know, into a larger, you know, or a demonstration stage into an, you know, like a larger scale adoption. Part of that is the economics of it. And part of it is, I think, you know, a sort of resistance to new technologies. Maybe there's a regulation element. And in fact, you know, the economics in this case are, okay, so you have this product, it's cellulose. Cellulose is a raw material that's, you know, there's a demand for it. But the question is there really demand for cellulose from sewage? You know, there, that might be a harder question to answer. So they have to not only develop the product, but they have to develop the market for the product. And so then, you know, so this is kind of the stuff that I learn when I'm out in the field.
Okay. I think we're going to take a question from Amy.
Hello there. Thank you so much for joining us, Chelsea. I have thoroughly enjoyed your book and I have shared it with so many other people.
Well, I'm delighted and flattered.
Well, as someone in the industry, I have a passion for wastewater treatment and water reclamation. And I absolutely loved your angle and just have thoroughly enjoyed it. My question is more to do with our very narrow, I would think, idea of wastewater treatment here in America. And you really shone a light on the different things that are out there, as well as the different options. And especially with everyone's different needs, how do you rank where we are and where the world is? Because I know we have a very first world, oh, our way is the best way, and everyone should have a toilet like us. But how do you see us moving forward if we step back and say, okay, maybe this isn't the answer. Maybe there are lots of answers. There's a lot of problems. What do you see as our next step? And what do you hope that the future looks like when it comes to wastewater?
Yeah. I mean, this was like one of these core questions of the book that kept me up at night. How do I answer this? And do I really even have the expertise to answer this? So the question of that is really interesting, because you can go to, say, washdata.org, I think it is, and you can play around with graphs there and see sort of the penetration of sewers or of on-site sanitation, you know, how much open defecation there is in a given country. And that's really important data, but it really is such sort of a limited picture of what's going on. In the US, for example, the census stopped asking this question about indoor plumbing many years ago. And so there isn't really good data, for example, on who in the US doesn't have a toilet, an indoor toilet. And there's certainly like not a very, very good data on, say, failing septic tanks, which we know is a really big problem. So we just to say that it's hard to feel like, for me to feel like I have a good overview of what's happening, even in the US or even in a place like the Netherlands, much less, you know, sort of a global view. But what I can say is that, you know, different countries are sort of leading. And in the US, it is also sort of regional and also, you know, just city by city what's going on. But, you know, that we're seeing different leaders come forward in different ways. So, for example, in South Africa, which still has quite a lot of inequality with respect to toilets, they're doing a lot of innovating. And I wouldn't be surprised if some new ideas that get widely adopted come out of South Africa in the coming years, because they have so much room to innovate. And Japan is known for having a very unique culture of toilets. But it really goes beyond this question of, you know, having buttons on your toilet that do funny things, but they also have a really strong culture of public toilets. So maybe, you know, that's a place that we could look to for an improvement in that regard. And then in the US, I think we're seeing, as you mentioned, Amy, that you know, you're interested in water reuse. And I think that we're seeing more and more leadership coming out of the US in that regard. Whereas, for example, here in the Netherlands, it's not really being done. It's only being done in a very limited way, because there's a lot of regulations that prevent it from being done in a broader sense. It's not a priority. So I guess we could. What I would like to see is this technology continuing to be a sort of proliferation of different options that are adopted in a way that's equitable and that's appropriate for the local culture. So, for example, some places wastewater reuse just isn't an alternative because of religious reasons that prevent people from accepting it in some countries. I'm not sure that that's necessarily like a priority to change, but maybe in those places, something else, you know, they can lead in some other kind of area. So I'm rambling a little bit, but perhaps you can help me, or perhaps I answer your question.
Yes, no, that's very helpful. And I think maybe a moment of clarity came to me when I realized that we are very narrow-minded in our ideals of wastewater treatment, and there is no one solution, because there are things that are so different for everyone throughout the world. I know you mentioned Catherine Flower's book,
yes.
where a septic system wouldn't work because of the way the water table is there and the soil, and just cramming a solution, one solution, yes, for everyone is not is not the option, especially even more so throughout the world.
Thank you, Chelsea, for a terrific presentation. I wanted to ask you, the Gates Foundation has spent many, many millions of dollars on their initiative to reinvent the toilet globally. As a journalist, what grade would you give the success of that effort?
From what I've seen, it's gone through quite a lot of different phases. And it's had a mixed reception among the researchers that I've spoken to. So there's not like a consensus. One of the things that I do hear a consensus on is that it certainly has raised awareness and enthusiasm for the project of bringing toilets to everyone around the world. The early challenge was very technology oriented, since then has broadened. They have broadened their efforts beyond just this one challenge to kind of take into account more of the on the ground realities. So I would say the way it started was really like a moonshot and a lot of hype, but the most experts who worked on the ground were very, some were quite put off. You know, they found the results a bit off-putting because they didn't find it practical, like a practical result at all. And they thought, well, I have a better way for you to spend that money. but I do think I am still waiting to see. I'm curious to see whether those projects will ultimately result in one or a number of different technologies. What do you think?
Well, I would agree with your assessment that mixed results at best, and kind of brings to mind the controversies around mega donors, the role of mega donors in these kinds of social efforts versus governmental or United Nations type efforts to bring about the best solutions.
Great, thank you. And we do have a question from the crowd now.
Hey, Chelsea. I grew up in a house basically where we see that we don't put anything in the toilet besides waste and toilet paper. But your book kind of mentioned that there's a lot of problems with sewage blockages and like sewer systems and stuff. And do you think that's just like a matter of not being educated on not throwing things in the toilet, like floss and other sorts of things, or a marketing problem because there's a lot of stuff that says it's flushable? But yeah, like, I never really thought about that because
I didn't either. I just thought of the toilet as like a kind of another trash can, and even better because then you didn't have to take out the trash, you know, you could flush it, then it would just disappear. And of course that wastewater treatment plant, you know, can just like handle anything. It never occurred to me that it couldn't, you know, so until relatively recently, I would say, you know, I would have flushed floss. Certainly, you know, certain products that are labeled as flushable. I think it's a problem with a sort of invisibility of the system, which is built in. You know, it's kind of known. It's known as a flush and forget technology, the flush toilet, like, you know, and it's sort of almost designed to let you forget it. And psychologically, we are trained from a young age to not think about it and what goes in there. So it's normal that, I mean, it's more common than not that people don't know what happens after the flush, just genuinely don't know. And have never really thought about it, you know, just don't even know that they don't know. So I think it's a problem that kind of goes beyond a lack of education, but it has to do with a profound willful ignorance that we all have about this technology.
aside from making an art installation out of, I think it was called Fatty McFatberg, is there like a, I don't know, do you think this is something that either, I guess, needs to be taught, or should there be like a marketing campaign or like a PSA or something?
Well, you know, they're actually, I think I've even seen, you know, the pandemic, you know, like had all of this, I don't know why it was, but there was all of this. I guess what happened was, it was all this news about, yeah, wipes and flushing and what you can put in your toilet at the beginning of the pandemic, because first of all, people were using all kinds of wipes and they were flushing them because they said flushable, or because it wouldn't occur to anyone that they wouldn't be flushable. And then they started causing all kinds of clogs and fatbergs. And then what happened was the wastewater people in various cities would invite news crews to come look at what was happening in the sewer. And all of a sudden, they started getting attention everywhere around the country and around the world. And people started seeing what was going on in a kind of visceral way. And everyone also had a kind of new, it was hard for me to even remember it, but a sort of like ethos of working together, and a kind of a weird understanding of our connectedness because of this virus that was circulating, and how we needed to act to be responsible toward one another. And I think all of that kind of combined to really raise awareness of what can and can't be flushed. So I do think that with not just with this subject, but really with all kinds of subjects around the toilet, it's really useful to capitalize on a moment in the culture to raise topics like this. So, you know, in a drought, you can raise topics about water reuse, that sort of thing. Or, you know, during the pandemic, there were lots of opportunities to raise toilet topics about, you know, flushing wipes, or, you know, using sewage, testing sewage for disease, which was a more obscure topic that people hadn't heard about that much at that point. So, yeah, so there's opportunities to talk about toilets in almost any big news event, like a hurricane. You can talk about sewage infrastructure.
Great. That makes sense. Thanks.
Thanks for the question.
We do have another question.
Hi, thank you for coming to talk to us today. I haven't been able to quite finish the book yet with finals coming up, but I've really enjoyed the first few chapters. And there was one quote that really stuck out at me. You said, as Sizek put it, as soon as you flush the toilet, you're right in the middle of ideology. And I was just kind of wondering what was your interpretation of that? Because it took me a second. I had to step back and really think about it.
Yeah, that's a philosopher who said that, who's written on toilets, and he actually writes on, I think, the question of like whether you have a shelf in the toilet, as some Europeans do or don't have a shelf. But I guess what that means to me is that the toilet has a larger meaning beyond just the place where that disposes of our, you know, body waste in so many ways.
Thank you so much.
We do have another question.
So my question is about the development of modern sewer systems.
All right. This has been good. And I feel like we're sort of just getting into the meat of the matter in some sense. I hate to close now, but I want to maybe step back and just thinking about like, this project, obviously it was a labor of love for you. What's happening now? Where are you going next? What's the next big project? Are you still going to be fishing around in the toilet, or are we looking elsewhere for your next book or project?
Well, thanks for the question. I still love toilets, and I don't think that there's, you know, another book about toilets in my future, in part just because I'm not sure anyone would pay me to write another book about toilets. I think everyone just gets one. but I would like to try other media. So perhaps there would be that. I also have been following up with articles on topics that I wanted to explore more thoroughly or that are now seeing new developments. So one thing that I'm really proud of is in February of this past year, I published a news feature in Nature on urine diversion. So if you want to look that up, it's called The Urine Revolution. It's got a lot of really great graphics with it as well. And it's really about the value of urine and how toilets that can separate urine from poop, which is something we haven't talked about today, could really make a huge difference. And how those technologies are really developing very quickly and maturing. But I also would like to write about other things. I've been writing about toilets for 10 years, almost exclusively in a lot of ways. And so I'm interested in other things. I also, you know, a book is a kind of lonely project. So I'm interested more in collaborative work now, maybe for my next phase. This is something that I, you know, have been kind of spreading quietly. So this is probably the biggest group I've ever said this to, but maybe it's the right group for it. I'm curious about collaborating with an expert on maybe working on a book of their passion as well. So a collaboration like that is something that I'm really intrigued by, with me as the writing expert, let's say. So, those are my thoughts going forward, but I'm still in a sort of holding pattern. Seeing what arises.
Well, very good. Very good. Well, we all who have read the book have thoroughly enjoyed it and, definitely appreciate you doing this coming.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
One more round of applause. And I'm sure if anyone has follow-up questions, I would assume we can send you an email, Chelsea.
Yes, you can send me an email. It's cwald@nasw.org.
Okay. Well, we will sign off. Thank you, everyone who joined on Zoom and everyone who's here in person. Some snacks upstairs. Chelsea, next time you're near the upstate of South Carolina, stop by and we'll get you your snacks too.
I would love to. That sounds fantastic. I'll have some snacks then.
All right.
Okay. Enjoy your snacks. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you, Chelsea.